We've got four candidates in front of you this evening. Kevin Price, representing Labour. Rod Tadrill, representing Liberal Democrats. James Palmer, Conservatives. And Peter Dore, who's an independent. And just for clarity purposes, we asked Julie Howell from the Greens and from Paul Bullen from UKIP. Both wanted to be here, but unfortunately could not be. But they were invited to come along. So we have our four, but all six were invited. Before we get into the detail here from our candidates, which we will shortly, let me just give you a sense, I think, as to how we propose to run the event. In a minute, I'm going to give each candidate 2 minutes to set out their stall on what they think some of the priorities are for the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough economy. They're going to do that in turn. They'll each take 2 minutes. And when they get within 20 seconds of their 2 minutes, they'll see me waving, so they'll know that they have 20 seconds left. And they promise me dutifully that they won't go over their 2 minutes, which is great. Once we've heard from that, then we'll get an opening question from John from the, Chamber of Commerce. And then we'll open it up to questions from you. So we have had four or five submitted in advance, either tonight or indeed today via email. So we will definitely be asking some of those questions. So if you asked or posted a question to us via email or wrote it down, I have them in front of me if you can't remember what you've said, but I will come to ask you to make those questions. So we're going to try and do it as best we can and try and theme it. So the first theme will be around jobs and skills. I think there's some questions that we want to explore on that. The second theme then is around housing and transport infrastructure related issues. And I think there's a third area around innovation, business and enterprise. So if you have some of those questions, we'll take each in turn. We'll probably cover, if we're well behaved, good discipline, we'll probably get about 20 minutes on each. So we'll have good time to talk about those different aspects. And then once we get within 10 or 15 minutes of closure, I'll give each candidate a chance to make their final closing statement of 2 minutes, and we'll be finished no later than 7:30. So that's how we're going to run it. Have those questions in your mind, because once we get through the candidates, and I want to come to you and get some good questions from you on all manner of different questions and issues. So let's get started with our first candidate and the first 2 minute opening pitch from Kevin Price. Kevin, 2 minutes from you.
Lovely, thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome everybody. I'm the Deputy Leader of Cambridge City Council and I hold the housing portfolio. That's dealing with the city's role as council house landlord and its wider strategic role for housing for the whole of the Greater Cambridge area, and I led for Cambridge as a council on housing matters throughout the devolution discussions. Devolution offers us the chance to have powers and funding that are currently exercised in Westminster do be decided more locally. It also gives the whole local government area the chance to debate and decide together on key priorities and then talk to the government as a single voice rather than as each council fighting for what are often mixed priorities, as happens now. Now, I see the Mayor's role as critical in making sure the combined authority is focused on the right priorities. Mine are shaped by being a Labour councillor. Firstly, we need to share the growth across the whole area, and Cambridge needs Huntingdon, Ely, Wisbeach and Peterborough as much as they need Cambridge. One of the first things the Coalition Government did in 2010 was to tear up regional planning, but we need to bring that back through the combined authority. I want to see an area-wide strategic plan that looks ahead for at least the next 20 years, that looks like a jobs strategy for the north and east of the devolution area, and is matched with an education and skills plan which will give our young people in our area the chance to take advantage of new employment opportunities. On transport and other infrastructure, I think we need Network Rail to invest in major improvements to rail links, including Wisbeach. A lesson that we've learned from Greater Cambridge City Deal is the importance of a clear link with Highways England to improve road infrastructure. Finally, a key part of the role is to bring in extra money to Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, starting with the second devolution bid in the summer of this year. With a focus on most disadvantaged and deprived areas, more devolved housing for, funding for housing and begin a conversation about health and social care, perhaps for a third bid in 2018. As well as that, the Mayor must be visible and accessible to all residents and set a high standard for councils on how they consult and inform on major projects before decisions are made. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Let's hear from our second candidate, Rod Cantor from the Liberal Democrats. Rod, your 2 minutes starts now.
So I'm a long distance runner. I run marathons. And the Mayor will require the skills of a marathon runner. The ability to set a goal, the ability to navigate the course, to speed up or slow down as appropriate, the need for determination, the need for buckets of energy. And I believe that I have the skills and real-life experience to be mayor. I've set up and I run my own company. I understand risk. I understand motivation. I understand how putting passion into something. And I combine that with being a Cambridge City Councillor, delivering for residents for over a decade. And as Mayor, I want to be a Mayor for everybody across the region. And as I've listened to people across the region, what they've said they need is they want a good job with money in their pocket. They want a decent home that is affordable, that's part of a community, not just bricks and mortar. They want good, reliable, affordable public transport that enables them to be connected and not isolated. And as Mayor, my vision is very simple: to deliver on those needs, to deliver long-term sustainable communities for the region, to deliver sustainable jobs, sustainable homes, and sustainable transport. And as Mayor, I recognise that I can't do that alone, that I need to reach out beyond party politics. And as Mayor also, I believe that I will be the glue that brings all those politicians together to deliver for the region, not just on devolved issues, but on those once-in-a-lifetime issues like Brexit. And as Mayor, I will be a strong voice for the region, a strong voice locally, a strong voice nationally, a strong voice for all those important issues for the people of the region.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Rod. Let's hear from our third candidate, James Palmer from the Conservatives. James, your 2 minutes.
Good evening. My name is James Palmer, and I'm the Conservative candidate for Mayor of Cambridge and Peterborough. My background is that for the last 10 years I've been a district councillor, and the last 8 years a county councillor, and for the last 4 years I've led East Cambridgeshire District Council. I'm the only candidate with the experience of leading authority. I'm the only candidate with the experience of delivering on major infrastructure, and I'm the only candidate with the experience of delivering on housing as well. You will hear many of the same arguments by the candidates. The needs for Cambridgeshire are tangible. We have to sort the infrastructure north to south. We have to sort the infrastructure east to west. What you need is a mayor with the experience of delivery and the vision to solve the problems in this county. What you need is a mayor who has the ability to stand up before Parliament and argue the case for Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, but also knows Cambridgeshire and Peterborough like the back of his hand. What you need is somebody who has lived here, who's walked the roads, walked the paths, driven the roads, got on the trains, who knows what it's like to run a business here, who knows what it's like to bring up children here, who knows what it's like to send children to university. You need somebody who can stand up for the community of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, who totally understands what is going on and what to do. All of the candidates will tell you they can do this, but I'm the only candidate who has the experience and who has actually delivered. Thank you.
Thank you very much, James. And our fourth candidate, Peter Dorr.
Good evening. Local government is a fail. Businesses hate them, the electorate hate them, government hates them, and if you ask half the councillors, they hate them as well. To expect councillors to be able to transform local government like it needs to be transformed, I think is naive. What you need is someone from the outside that is going to completely turn everything upside down. Right the way through, what you've heard is about how they are going to do it. What I've seen by going around Cambridgeshire over the last few months is that the solutions are in your hands. And the, what we need to do is to get the councils out of the way. The reason we have a housing crisis is the failure of their planning. They've not allowed us to build enough houses. The reason we have a transport problem is their fail for providing proper transport. What we need is someone who's going to come in here and get council out of the way that allows you to solve our problems. Because councils do not have all the answers, they do not have the resources to deliver on what they can promise, and we've got to do it ourselves. And so what I want you to do is to vote for me, bring me in as mayor, and we address these major problems as a team and make Cambridgeshire the place that we all want it to be.
Great, thank you very much indeed. So, we had our four opening statements from our four candidates. We're now going to move into the question and answer session. And our first question comes from John Bridge,
yes.
From the Chamber. John, you can ask your question.
Yes, if I could ask all of the candidates, if you should become the mayor for this area, what would be the number one item on your to-do list which you would action immediately?
Okay. Number one to-do list. Let's go. Peter, you go first.
I think one of the quickest wins we could do is actually give permission to all the landowners who have got land near our local train stations to put up car parks. Because that would get a lot of traffic out and onto the trains into something that actually has some spare resources.
Okay. James, okay. Your number one priority?
Yes, I've publicly stated that I want to see an underground in Cambridge and a light railway into Cambridgeshire. And I've also publicly stated that the first action will be to enable get a company in to do planning around the spatial planning around the need for an underground and a light railway and begin to solve that problem. I understand it's a long-term project, but it will be the first thing that I actually finally do.
Okay. Rod, first thing we're doing?
I think the first thing I would do would be actually to meet people and listen to people. I think we have a classic illustration where devolved structures have not actually listened to people and just set off in a direction which has caused contradiction, confusion and chaos. And we all know what that is. It's the Greater City Deal. So I would listen to people and spend a period of time understanding and getting to know what the key issues are and also getting to know the political players across the region, because that's important to deliver for the region so that we can all deliver together for the people.
Okay, great. Kevin?
Well, firstly, I think I would have already listened to a great many people at events like this, canvassing, knocking on doors, generally talking to people as you know, part of my role as a councillor has involved that for a long time, so already out there talking and listening to people. But in terms of priorities, we stated, and I've stated long, that housing was our number one priority. And on top of my to-do list will be to ensure that we make a start on building some of the much needed affordable housing in Cambridgeshire and Peterborough and on the council housing that's much needed in the city.
Okay, great, thank you very much. So if you had some thoughts on immediate priorities. Let's get some questions on that first theme we highlighted, which was jobs and skills. So if you can raise your hand if you have a question in relation to jobs and skills, I'll come to you and then I'll get our candidates to reflect on that, get them to respond to how they charge it. Yes, we've got a lady there.
Thank you.
Your voice is fine, so you don't need to.
Okay.
You don't need the mic.
I'm Councillor Michelle Temple from Fenland District Council. Probably the only one over here from the north. But one of the interesting things about jobs and skills in Cambridge, in Fenland, is actually what we have is a lack of skill and very unskilled people. I would really be interested to know how you would try and change, because we have a difficulty getting good teachers. We have a difficulty in getting the skill levels up. I would be really interested to know, rather than talking about what you do in our area, what you would do in our area.
Great, okay. Rod, take that question on.
So I happened to be in Parliament last week at a parliamentary committee on skills and training, where there are a number of Metro Mayor candidates present. And one of the things that came clearly across in that discussion was that there is a lot of effort being put in, certainly in this region, in terms of skills and training, but it needs to be done on a coordinated basis. It needs to have someone to act as the glue. And an illustration of that is in relation to jobs, where we've seen the Let, for example, attracting employment away from your area, from the Wisbeach and Chatteris area, towards the employment area of Alconbury. And so, therefore, as mayor, what I would see is an opportunity to actually channel some of the efforts that are already taking place in a more focused way, in particular for areas like Wisbeach, where the level of employment is level of unemployment is not high, but the level of skilled employment is not fantastic.
Okay, James.
Yes, hi, Michelle. I've been trying to lobby, have been lobbying Justin Greening and also our local MPs, and also I've spoken to Rob Halford, who's a minister for apprenticeships, as you probably know. I feel that there's an issue here with getting schools involved, and there's going to be something in it for schools. At the moment, schools will give lip service to apprenticeships, but they won't actually give something, get properly involved, because their purpose is to provide 5A to C students to go to university. And that's the problem. I feel that if we have recruitment professionals working inside schools, but also government allow us to get league table points for schools for placing children into apprenticeships, you will see the dynamic totally change. We have schools that do very well on the A to C's, and the best performing comprehensives are hitting around 70%, but I know it's the same in Fenland as it is in East County, it's the same in the city. The best comprehensives, they draw the best pupils from the other comprehensives. And it means even in the best schools, 30% of the pupils are not getting 5A to C's, and they're not being forwarded on to apprenticeship schemes either. And in the lower performing schools, it's 50, 60 or even 70% of those pupils. So my answer is, I have been lobbying government, I have spoken to the Secretary of State for Education, I will continue to do so, but my answer is get league table points for schools that mean that schools get judged equally for providing young people into the work service, providing the skills for the economy, then we can see real change. It would work in Fenland, it would work in East County, it would work across the whole county. I have offered up the combined authority to the Secretary of State for Education as a pilot scheme for this. And I will continue to lobby the Secretary of State because I believe that's the only way we can begin to get the workforce that we need for this county.
Okay. Kevin, what would you be doing around lack of skills?
Well, I have some skills problems. Yes, I mean, and I think some of the things have been covered, but I think it's important that we do need stronger links between business and education. I mean, much has been said that, you know, schools are geared up largely to produce candidates for university. Now, you know, I left school at the age of 15 with no qualifications whatsoever, and I went on to be, to do a couple of apprenticeships, as it happens, before I found the one I wanted. And I think that really is the route. There are a good number of young people who are not academically gifted, but can, you know, produce, and I think that's exactly what we need. If we can produce a higher skilled workforce in an area, for instance, as the questioner asked, Fenland, but you know, I mean, I represent King's Hedges in Cambridge, which, you know, is a pretty much the most deprived ward in the city, and you know, our young people there will be struggling in much the same way. So it's about getting young people involved and getting them skilled, because that will attract workforce, you know, that will attract new employers. You know, if they know that there's a skilled workforce in an area, they're more likely to come.
Okay. Peter, this issue
of this is an excellent example of local government getting out of the way. These skills need to be done in the workplace. Now, I was at Steel Fabricators. They do an excellent apprenticeship. They've upped it a bit, but they were going to double the number of apprenticeships that they had. But the paperwork and hassle they got from local government meant they scaled it back. And virtually all of the skills we need to be learned in the workplace. Education is absolutely fine, but it doesn't make a good world.
You've got to do it on the factory. You've got to do it there. There are so many of these skills. And the lead for skills has got to be within the businesses, not in the education establishment who sit in ivory towers guessing and doing stuff that they did when they were at work. The world of work has totally changed, and it changes so fast. Local trading centres really can't keep up with the needs of our business. That's particularly the case in South Cambridgeshire, where not just the machines that people have got to mind, but the processes that they're doing are completely beyond the education system we have within our colleges.
So just a follow-up reflection on that, they get your thoughts on this. I recognise your points about connecting skills development to the workforce and to business needs. But just picking up this issue on schools, get your reflections on, you know, this point that, you know, there is variation on school performance across the different districts or the different areas. You know, less than half, 48% of children leave school in Peterborough with 5 GCSEs, including maths and English, which is, in many respects, the bare minimum to be competitive in a labour market, particularly in a labour market like Cambridge, 48%. The highest in the area is obviously Cambridge, which is nearly two-thirds, or it's actually two-thirds, 66%. So there's variation across the school performance, just looking at the, you know, the districts or the areas. I just wonder whether that's an issue for you, a concern for you, and what you might, you know, what you might do about it. Chris, what's your response?
I mean, I think you'll find from my answer earlier, yeah, it's absolutely a concern.
Yeah.
I think the postcode problem with education is tangible, and I think a way to lift education up is, at the moment, parents choose school simply on whether they're going to the children who's going to get the best grades and therefore get the best opportunities to go to university. That's absolutely great, and I've got no problem with that. Of course, we need the best people to go to university, and we always will. But what we're not doing is rewarding schools for getting people onto the employment ladder, giving the opportunity to start up their own business in the future, through apprenticeships, etc. So that's why I think it's absolutely key that parents will have in the future would have the ability to choose a school that might give their children the best opportunity to get a career, not just the highest possible education. And I truly believe that, as I said, getting lead table points for schools and putting their children into appropriate apprenticeship schemes will lift the education system. But no, I was lucky enough to visit CRC, where they're doing some exceptional work on apprenticeships last week, and they were telling me what they wanted was children to be who they knew that some children were not going to get 5A to 6. And what they really wanted was those children to be educated in extra maths. Yep. So at least when they came to CRC, they'd got their seat grade in mathematics. Because virtually every job that they were putting people into, or every apprenticeship, wanted a seat grade in mathematics. Yep. So I think there's work to be done. And as I said, as mayor, I will definitely put Cambridgeshire up as a pilot scheme for this.
Okay.
I have included the Secretary of State, and I will continue to do so.
Brilliant. Okay, Kevin. Variation, school performance problem, how might you resolve it as the Metro Mayor?
I think what we have to establish is exactly where these areas are, because it's, you know, you already said the proportion in Cambridge compared to other areas of sort of attainment of 5 GCSEs or more. Is two-thirds. We have to somehow get the balance, and a lot of this, I think, is probably outside the mayor's actual remit. You know, the mayor's remit is to encourage money and opportunities for skills across the whole piece.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, I've done very little research on that level of education, because it's out of the remit of the mayor. Obviously, if and when the rules change, you go off and do the research, and then you express some opinions.
Okay. Very good.
I think you've got to take some account of the raw material that the schools are getting in when you look at these results. You know, the raw material that the schools in Cambridge get is actually quite significantly different to the raw material that you're getting from the schools that have got 12 different first languages.
Okay, Rod.
School performance variation.
I think just picking up on this point in terms of a role for the mayor, whilst it's not part of the devolution deal, it is a role for the mayor. It's a very important role because it feeds through in terms of jobs and in terms of homes and in terms of communities. And I think there's an important point that my colleagues have really missed, and it's you cannot just look at the education alone. The County Council came up with a very interesting piece of analysis, which I think was published earlier this year, around health outcomes. And it's a broader set of issues. It's about the families and their health position, particularly in the Fenlands. And it's also about those jobs that parents have and their desire and their aspiration for their children. So there's lots of tangible things that one can do that you know, I'd certainly support the idea in terms of linking in the schools in terms of job opportunities, going through into apprenticeships, and in particular apprenticeship degrees. But I think the mayor can also act as the glue for a much broader set of issues, bringing together the components of the combined authority to deliver on those broader family issues that are certainly present in places like Fenland and even in parts of Cambridge.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Another question on jobs and skills that you've heard, or responses you want to give, given what the candidates have said. Yes.
Hi, I'm Claire Aston from the National Housing Federation. I was interested in some ways that there wasn't any mention of the connection between the investment that the Cambridgeshire Combined Authority will have over a long period of time and the skills mix, because if there's one thing that is within the remit of the Combined Authority and the Mayor, it's making sure that the skills are there to deliver the infrastructure and housing and at future times perhaps the health and social care and other aspects that will come into devolution. So I'd be interested to hear what the candidates might want to say around where there's a potential for influence through direct investment and investment decisions and how that links to the ability to create a supply chain around skills.
Great, that's a great question. Kevin, how are you going to do that? Connect the pipeline and how you propose to see the area change over time, and then the skills requirements in making that happen in different ways, whether it's through housing construction or whether it's road construction or and the related activities. How will you use your powers to make that happen, bring that together?
Well, you know, as we're aware, the mayor will have, you know, greater influence over construction and over sort of transport road infrastructure. None of this happens in isolation, so we have to have people to build those houses, people to design those houses, you know, people to build work building the roads and all the general transport infrastructure. So, I'm not entirely clear how the mayor would actually directly influence that. But you know, my aim would be to, you know, because we're doing all the work that needs doing, that we are going to need the people coming in to do those jobs, and we're going to need them to be skilled. So there will be people already skilled. We bring in young people, and they get trained, as partly has been said, on the job.
Okay, Rod. How do you connect these different agendas?
Well, it's interesting. The leper's done a skills audit, and there are a number of sectors where there are material shortages in skills, but one of them is construction. And it's not just low-level construction jobs. It's actually construction jobs across the spectrum. And I think the mayor has a major material opportunity to influence that particular sector, because if you look at the pot of money that's come down from government, a big chunk of it relates to building homes and infrastructure building. So I believe there is an opportunity. For example, the mayor could, as part of the tendering of the contract, build into that such that there are apprenticeship programs, such that there are training programs built into those contracts that the mayor and the combined authority initially provide out to house builders, to infrastructure builders. So that in effect, we're training young people and also people who may be retraining, because I think it's an important point that we have a large element of the employed population who are moving on to look for different ways, different means of employment. And the mayor has a major opportunity through that mechanism to actually skill the region up for a house building construction programme which is likely to go on for decades.
Okay, James.
Yes, thank you for asking that question, because it's very valid. And as I've been touring the county and talking to people of all sorts and businesses, of course, as well, what businesses are telling me is at the moment, it's not all businesses, but some businesses are saying to me, we can't get the right apprenticeships for our business. And I think that's the job the mayor can sort out. And the mayor will be a conduit between business and education. I disagree with slightly with Peter. I do think this is a key area for the mayor. I think skills is absolutely integral to what we want to achieve in Cambridgeshire. We know the dynamic has changed. Brexit has changed the dynamic. We won't be able to import cheap labour forever and more into Cambridgeshire. We know that cheap labour has fueled the economy of Cambridgeshire, but that will change. Agri-tech is key to what we can achieve in the future, and we need to provide apprenticeships who can work in modern agriculture, of course, in the construction industry, but the whole realm of what this county provides, which is immense. And I've already spoken to farmers who said to me, the trouble is we can't take on apprenticeships because they come out of college and they can't drive a 17-ton trailer. Well, these things have to be sorted out, and it's the mayor's job. The mayor will have the privilege, as I've done also already, to go into appropriate colleges, talk to its principals and say, look, this is what your business wants, this is what's needed. Let's get something sorted to provide the workforce of the future.
Okay, great. Peter?
You can say this is an excellent example of what happens when you put politicians between the parts of the market. You know, the politicians went out there and said, we want everyone to be a graduate and go off to university. And now they devalued manual work so that we, you know, a lot of the youngsters think that manual work is a failure. And there are some great jobs. I've just come off the construction site for the Ely bypass. And you know, there are some highly paid civil engineers there. And they're saying, there's no one coming through for our jobs because we get our feet muddy. And this is because politicians interject themselves into the market and tell people what they should be doing. The sooner we get politicians out of it and allow the businesses to talk directly to the youth, and by all means, as mayor, I can facilitate those two people talking to one another, but for the politician to get in between them is an absolute classic recipe for failure.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on to our second theme on transport and housing. Unsurprisingly, this was the area where, you know, there was a lot of interest. The questions we got were mainly in and related to these sorts of issues. Some themes, as you'd be unsurprising again to know, were pretty constant. Is Henry Collins? Where's Henry?
Yeah.
Great. Henry, you asked, have you got your question in front of you?
No, I didn't write it down.
Okay. Do you mind if I read it out for you?
Go on.
Right, so this is from Henry. This is several others picked up on this this as well. How do you aim to improve the quality of roads, and can it be done without increasing tax? And I'm presuming in relation to tax, you're thinking about congestion charge, some variation on road prices.
I'm thinking of
any tax in general.
Any tax.
Okay. So how do you improve the quality of roads, and how do you do it without increasing tax? James.
Thank you. I think we've got to be clear about what the mayor has power over, and the mayor will have power over infrastructure and transport for the whole county, but not over the current road system and improvements that will stay within the county council. So the current system needs to be improved, I think we'll all agree, but that's not where the mayor will be, will have control. So when you talk about quality of roads, improvements to the road system, well certainly I'm already looking at public-private finance initiatives and investment into the county. We're looking at clear growth agenda, of course, across the whole of Cambridgeshire, and we have to get the private sector involved in that. It can't be purely paid for out of the tax system, nor should it, but we have to work cleverly and closely with with private companies. I've got some experience of that in the Leisure Centre in England, where we use private finance to bring forward £4.5 million worth of infrastructure into that site to allow us to develop the site. So that I've had some kind of experience of that. I know that it can be done. So if we want to bring forward major new infrastructure, new roads, and we know that the A10 needs dual, we know that if you go to Peterborough and Fenland, that they're talking about the M11 being extended up through Fenland to open up the growth in that area. So there's much that can be achieved, but it is about public-private finance.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. We'll come back to some other aspects of the congestion issue in a second. Peter, how do you improve the quality of the roads, and can you do it without raising tax?
Well, the answer is yes. There's a paper on my website that tells you how I'm going to do it, and it's quite bold. But fundamentally, what we've got to do is use modern technology to solve the problems. So if you take, for instance, the congestion in Cambridge, you know, the one thing you can't do is build more roads. And while I would support digging tunnels, quite expensive, it's not going to solve our problem for 10 years, and we've got problems now. So what we've got to do is use our resources better. And my belief is that we can do that by going to what are called velocycles, small cars, single-seater, using those for our urban journeys. And as a result, all of our roads become four lanes because the cars are so much smaller. And so we immediately at least double the capacity of Cambridge roads. And there are similar technological solutions that we can do in today's connected society to actually make transport in rural areas and in the feeder routes much more effective using the existing infrastructure.
Okay, great. Rod? Improving the quality of the roads?
Firstly, I disagree with colleagues in terms of saying that the role of the mayor should not actually be full on in terms of addressing the transport issue. The mayor will be the glue. They will have the strategic priority in relation to transport, but working in conjunction with all the members of the combined authority. And if you speak to any transport policy person, they will say that you need to rely on all modes of transport. Not just dependent on roads, not just dependent on another form of or mode of transportation, but all modes of transport. So as mayor, my goal will be twofold. One is to strategically look at some of those long-term opportunities, such as light rail here in Cambridge, such as addressing one of the key issues in this particular area, which is the Girton interchange, but also addressing some of the short-term issues. And the greater city, the greater Cambridge City deal has failed to do that, which is in relation to reducing some of the congestion on the roads within our city centre. And I know the Centre for Cities have talked about considering a congestion charge. Well, I think that could be one of a menu of things that are put to the people of the city to vote on. Because that may, if people accept it as something that we should consider, raise revenue to address some of those long-term issues and fund some of those long-term projects such as light rail.
Okay, well we will come on to that specific because we had a couple of questions on that. But Kevin, improving the quality of the roads, can it be done? Can it be done without raising tax?
Well, improving the quality of the roads, I think there was a report out today that nationally the road infrastructure is, you know, needs some £12 billion spent on it. Just to bring it up to a reasonable level, so you know, this area would be a share of that. I think that's if that's the direction of the question. How do you improve the road? You improve roads by widening them, as has been mentioned. That the A10 might need dualling. There was the A47. In the Wisbeach area, that would need the same. Now, some of that can be done within this sort of devolution deal, with the money that's there over the next 30 years. But to improve actually improve the roads that we've got at the moment is going to require a lot more money than the mayor is going to have responsibility for. So does it need to come from raising tax? Probably not. Perhaps it could come from ensuring that tax that isn't paid is paid. We could use some of that to improve our roads.
Okay, let's stay on this theme. Is Angela Chadwick Healy in the room?
Yes.
Angela, do you have your question in front of you?
Thank you. I'm sorry to focus on Cambridge again, but we do have a real problem with traffic congestion in this city at the moment. And I wanted to ask the candidates that with regard to control road use in Cambridge, would they consider some form of congestion charge or road pricing? And the revenue for that could be used to subsidise public transport into the city, because at the moment it's very expensive for people to come here to work.
Great, thank you very much, Andrew. So we'll pick up in another question, I think, the last bit of Andrew's question about what we might do to make public transport more effective. But where do you sit, where do you stand on some form of road pricing or congestion charge? They are slightly, obviously, different things in regards to managing the congestion. It manifests itself in the heart of Cambridge, but actually, in many respects, it starts all over the area. Rod, what do you think?
Well, as I said in my earlier response, I think that's something which should be put as a menu of possible options to residents, basically. And I think one of the big failures of the Greater Cambridge City deal is not to have that strategic thinking. There are a number of short-term solutions that also need to be addressed as part of that. So you can't just say, well, I'm going to charge people to come into the city without providing some alternative in relation to park and ride and reliable public transport. And the role of the mayor has an amazing opportunity to do that because of the franchising opportunity. You can actually create an integrated transport authority as part of that function of the mayor. And if you look elsewhere in the country, some of them are in their infancy, but a lot of them are following the model of the London model. Now, clearly, that's a more mature model, and it's a larger scale model. But on a scaled-down basis, there is an opportunity within this region to do something very similar. And what that does is it changes the game completely, because then it enables you to map out in a much more strategic way how to address some of the material issues that people face on a day-to-day basis in terms of getting around the region. I mean, you know, people drive, and the idea of dual carriaging the A10, what's that going to do? It's going to put a lot of traffic down at the bottom of the A10 on Milton Road. That's all it's going to do. And in 3 years' time, people will be queuing back up the A10 because there will be nowhere for them to go. So tarmacking is not necessarily the solution. We need to be braver than just basically assuming that putting tarmac down delivers, in the long term, a solution that's acceptable to the residents of the region.
Okay, great. Kevin, particularly the question about congestion charge or some form of road pricing, is that on the table for you if you become the mayor of this place?
No, congestion charging isn't something that's on the table as far as okay. I'm concerned. I think, and you know, got reasons for that. And the idea that somehow we charge people who have been priced out of living in Cambridge, for instance, and have to move further and further out in order to be able to afford to live, are then charged to come back to do the jobs that they were already doing in Cambridge. And I think that's that whole policy is a big mistake. That's, we have to have other aspects. People from outside the city want to be able to come in to the city and park in the streets. People that live in the city don't want people coming in from outside to park in their streets. We have to find ways of improving park and ride sites, bigger, better park and ride sites, so that people can leave their cars outside the city and then travel in on fast, effective and reasonably priced public transport. A workplace parking levy where employers will have, that will be paid. It's not, then all the onus is not on people that are having to come in into the city, the people that already live in the city? Are we saying, or are the proponents of a congestion charge saying you only charge the people coming in, or do you charge everybody? Do you charge the people that are already living in the city for moving around the city all times of the day? I just think it's too confused. And it's put as a, you know, a quick, the magic silver bullet, and I don't think it is.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Peter, congestion charge or some form of road pricing, is it part of your...
I hate congestion charging. Roads have been paid for by everyone's tax dollar. What the congestion charge does is transfer ownership of those roads to the rich, the ones who can afford it. And the poor don't get any benefit from those roads. So from that level, I thoroughly reject it. What I think we can do, and I think a much finer tool, is to use rationing. And the great thing about rationing is that we can actually work out what the optimum number of car movements per hour is, and actually make sure that's the number that are allocated. The problem with road charging is that if everyone wants to come in at 9 o'clock, they just pay the charge and come up the roads. Mm-hmm. If you've got rationing, you can, you know, perhaps shift your journey to 10 o'clock instead, because there are tokens available there. You can allow the rationing tokens to be traded, so that people who choose to walk to work, cycle to work, use public transport, what have you, can actually get some compensation for not having the pleasure of driving. So it is much more egalitarian, much better tool. Okay. If you're going to go this route, then I'd say rationing is a way better model than the blunt tool of road pricing.
Very good, thank you very much. Jims?
No for me at all. Not in agreement with congestion charging in Cambridge. I can understand why it's in London, because there's a clear alternative, and there's more than one alternative. Until we have an alternative in Cambridge, I don't think we should ever go down the route, and I'm totally against workplace parking levy as well. We mustn't kill the business that exists in the centre of Cambridge.
Okay.
So no to both.
Okay, great. Well, this picks up on the a question I want to get. Is Margaret Reynolds in the room? Where's Margaret? Margaret, have you got your question in front of you? So this picks up on the final point that James just made. So you ask your question, Margaret.
Okay, so I'm a member of the Federation of Cambridge Residents Association, the Oxford Brothers Residents Association, also an architect. And I've been involved in the Histon Road workshops reviewing the proposals for the city via. The Metro Mayor would obviously have the opportunity, as has already been mentioned, to build a region-wide public transport system which integrates trains, buses, guided buses, even possibly taxis, and I know that's happening already in East Cambridge, into a single system which would be covered by a single electronic ticket. And obviously, the example for this, as already been mentioned as well, would be Transport for London. The expertise for that is down the road. Are the candidates prepared to consider using this as the goal for transport, so that we pull in everything that's already there and link them up and help people find out how to get where they want to get? I'm particularly concerned because we're looking at residents parking in our area, and I just have no idea where all the people who come to work in Cambridge, if we put that in place, where they will park.
Okay, very good. So, how are you going to build the alternative in many ways? How are you going to think about public transport as a system, and particularly, you know, Margaret, thinking about part of that is having an integrated ticketing system, an information system that makes the system much more efficient and interconnected across the area. James?
Yes, thank you, Molly. I've publicly stated, and I will repeat, and I will continue to repeat, that the answer that I believe to Cambridge's problem is an underground in the city and a light railway into Cambridgeshire. We are looking at substantial growth in this county, and we have to completely and utterly sort out the transport around the city of Cambridge in order to engender that growth throughout the entire county. Cambridge will grow as much in the next 10 years as it has in the last 50, and it's likely to double again after that. But we know it's rigged with greenbelt, so it's reliant entirely upon the market towns around the county for its growth, and also out of county. So yes, we need an integrated transport solution. Yes, it has to be under the city here, and yes, it has to go out. Why not go as far as Chatteris, and why not go to St Neots and to Huntington? We should be looking at Royston, Mildenhall. It's a large area, but I don't think anybody is sitting here now saying it was ridiculous that London built an underground between 1890 and 1950. Of course they're not. In actual fact, of course, London is spending a lot of money on Crossrail. Cambridge is an extraordinary generator of wealth. We had a company in Cambridge sell last year for £24 billion. There are international investors who want to invest in this city. We know with the growth that's coming to this city that we can enhance their investment over a 30 to 50 year period. Somebody at some stage has got to stand up with a long-term vision to sort out the problems in the south of this county. I'm prepared to do so. I know I can't build an underground system and a light railway in a 4 year period, but I can get it started. And as I said from the first question, day one, first thing in the door, that's exactly what I plan to do.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, James. Peter, think about this public transport system. Can you make it happen?
Okay, I think what we've got to do is actually, for once, go to government and ask them to allow us to go outside the regulations. One of the great problems of transport is all the regulation. Buses have to stop at bus stops. They can't pick you up at your door. Taxis have great difficulty in picking up more than one passenger at any one time. There's all sorts of regulation there. What I'd like to see us being able to do is to integrate it by blurring the lines between private transport, public transport, taxis, and similar. So that we can do it. And that blurring the lines, yes, you know, single ticketing system, although in all honesty, Apple Pay kind of does it for free. I don't really know, you know, sort of nowadays you just go click and away it goes, and then the remainder of the argument is, you know, how much the fare is. And, you know, the great danger is that the great danger of multimodal travel is that typical fares are a big step and then a small increment by mile. Mm-hmm. And if you have three steps, you get three big steps, but not much distance. Okay. So you need to sort out some of the tariff problems in there. And get that sorted. So it's all technology actually that we can do here, and again using 21st century technology to make the most of our existing infrastructure.
Okay, very good. Kevin, making this system work, scheduling information, ticketing across the piece, what's your vision for that? How would you make it happen?
Well, I think as has been already been said, there is a need for an integrated ticket system, and I think that's something that, as I understand it, because a lot of this is the City Deal's role, and this is what the City Deal are looking at. The City Deal are looking at a lot of the things to do with, because this is being sort of talked about as Cambridge, and I think the Mayor has got to work alongside the City Deal. It was always stated at the outset that the discussions with the combined authority that it was not going to override or take away the Greater Cambridge City Deal, and that is my view. That would be my I would be perfectly willing and happy to work alongside the City Deal to look at the issues that there are, particularly in Cambridge. I mean, the Mayor's role obviously goes wider than that, but I think what people are looking at is what would happen in the city. You know, the potential for an underground system in the city. I mean, that can be investigated. I have my doubts as to whether that's desirable or even feasible. But you know, I'm no expert in that, so I think you know we would have to have that looked at. But my understanding is that Cambridge would need to at least double in size, and that's double in size physically, before an underground system would be feasible.
Okay, very good. Rod, how do you make the public transport?
Well, firstly, I'm a bit concerned about what some of my colleagues have said. For example, what they're saying is the role of the mayor kind of, there's a fence around the Greater Cambridge area when it comes to transport, and you know, the mayor kind of steps back. And what I think the role of the mayor should be is to engage with the Greater City, Cambridge City deal. I mean, its track record to date, as we're all aware, has not been fantastic. So I think it's important they have some positive guidance from the elected mayor in relation to these issues. And I think there is a number of key points to make on an integrated transport authority, that it actually thinks on a broader basis and it thinks strategically long term. And what it can do, therefore, it can do some of those short-term fixes to solve a problem that we do have. People sit in their cars for an hour and a half a day, travelling to work and back, and that's not a high-quality life at all. So we can do some short-term fixes, and I welcome colleagues who say that they would be keen to explore the integrated transport opportunity of light rail, because then they should encourage their colleagues on the Greater Cambridge City deal to invest a very small amount of money just to validate it. Because at the moment, that's not happened. They've invested some money on the bullet bus, but no money has gone towards the light rail to explore whether or not it is valid. We can actually deliver it. And I think that's something that should happen, and as mayor, I'd encourage them to do so. But just coming back to this point in terms of an integrated transport authority, we already see modes of private transport being called out in Peterborough, for example, to pick people up. In some of the outer areas of Peterborough, like Dunthorpe, where the city council there reduced their subsidy in terms of bus transport, and so now people call out a bus. So let me give you the illustration. Joe Bloggs wants to go to the surgery, he calls the bus out, it takes them 2 hours to come. They then have to sit at the surgery after their appointment because they're not sure on how long it will take, for 3 hours for the bus to come and collect them and take them home. And what happens? They don't go to the surgery. They call the doctor and say, I would like the doctor to come to me. And that's an illustration, a small illustration, of where we are in terms of public transport, and in particular, buses.
Okay.
And the mayor has an opportunity to fix that, and fix that properly.
Okay, great. We've taken three questions on transport. I'm looking for a question in relation to housing. Any questions in the audience on housing? Or I'll ask a very generic one. Yes, sir.
Hi, Scott Eastwood from the Alzheimer's Society. On Friday, we launched a housing charter, what looked at housing, what was accessible for all, including those with dementia, but people who may have sight concern, but also families who need housing. How would you build a strategy that worked for everyone and not just for a few who can afford the housing in the city centre?
Right. So, and the context is that Cambridge and the area more generally is, if you look at house prices, are very, very high in a national context, never mind in a local context, and the rate of price increase is quite extraordinary over quite a long period. We suggest that we are not building enough housing, and then that presents some problems around affordability. Kevin, how do you get the housing, but actually some of the housing the gentleman was asking about, that's affordable to those on average wages?
Well, it's quite fortuitous that the combined authority has two amounts of money for affordable housing. One is the £70 million that is ring-fenced for Cambridge City Council to enable it to build council housing, which will be rented at local housing allowance rates. So this is genuinely affordable housing for people. We build our homes to a very, very good standard. They will be built to a very good standard. There will be what you might call family homes. The pressure in the city of Cambridge on housing, on the people on what used to be called the housing list, the housing needs register, is on 1- and 2-bedroom properties. So the majority of things that we would be building to meet that need
would be one and two bedroom, but there will be three bedroom homes built with that. They will be built as lifetime homes, so that they will be for people, you know, and as they age, as they get less mobile, those homes can be adapted for them. The rest of the money, the £100 million that was for affordable housing, mainly built through housing associations in the rest of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, I'm absolutely certain will be built in much the same way, and these are designed, you know, the idea of this money is to help get these affordable homes built by housing associations, and again they will be for rent for people on low to medium income.
Okay, very good. Rod, how do we get more housing? How do we get more affordable housing?
Well, as I talk to people, I mean, one of the key issues that people say is the ability not just to buy a house, but to rent a house. And if you look in Cambridge and other parts of the region, the actual affordability of rent is also forcing people out. So I was, I met with some businesses, small businesses in the city here, and one of the hotels, for example, their chefs have to basically travel from beyond Ely to actually come to work, because basically they cannot afford to rent close by. We see a lot of those people who undertake jobs that are very important to us, such as care workers and so forth, who do not get paid high salaries, who aren't able to live close to their area of employment. We have a need of 49,000 affordable homes over the course of the next 15 years. That was a paper that went to the combined authority just at the last meeting. 49,000 affordable homes the combined authority believes we need. So we're going to deliver 2,000, okay? It's a start, but it's not a big start. And what I believe we need to do is we need to explore, as part of that affordable offer, a local living rent. And that's a concept that's being pioneered in London. And instead of basically pricing the affordable rent on a market rent or a sub-market rent, a discount of 20%, you actually price it on the median salary. So you're actually pricing it on the basis of somebody who can afford to pay, and that's a third of their salary, which typically across the country, if you look at shelter indicate that should be a third of your disposable income. And that's a product that, as mayor, I would definitely explore, because that's a product which is most needed at this point in time. Now, clearly, it would only be in relation to new build affordable, but at least it's a start to address that material issue.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Ron. Peter, how do we get more housing, more affordable housing?
Well, I'm sorry. These councillors have conspired to make housing short by their planning policy. Nearly 20 years ago, I proposed building a new town at Northstone, and against the council's wishes, I actually got it as part of the strategic plan for Cambridgeshire. Nearly 20 years later, the first houses are coming on stream, simply because the councillors prevaricated, kept on changing, and also, to a certain extent, allowed the developers to manage the stock so that they maximise their income.
Okay, so
what we've got to do is actually shift the ownership of the plots to the people. So we don't sell them to the developers, we sell them to aspirational people. They will have the motivation to get that house built tomorrow. The second thing that I'm already doing is working with a consortium to build a modular homes factory in North Fenland. This factory will turn out 20 homes a day. This gets rid of the skill shortage. It means that we can ferry a house from Fenland down here, have it up and operational in a few days. These are things that we can do now, and we've got to get these politicians out of the way and allow people to get access to the land so we can build houses.
Okay, you can help. James, you made your pitch. If you want to pick up on Peter's points, by all means, and then I'll get quite a response.
I'm going to stand up because I can't see you through everybody else, and I'm not going to
papers up on Peter's points. He's made them as erudite as he needs to. I think the difference between the other three candidates here and myself, and I said it earlier, I'm already running an authority. I've had to meet this challenge head on already. So when you talk about a strategy, what strategy do you have? I already have a strategy in place. It's called Community Land Trust. It's up and running already. If you look on Google and you look up Streatham Community Land Trust, you will see that we have provided in Streatham, it's our first scheme, 70 houses, of which 33% are low-cost houses, but they are controlled by the trust, which is based in the village itself, and they are specifically for people who live and work in the village but can't afford to get on the housing ladder. So that's the strategy that we have. The cost to the taxpayer of the 33% of those 70 is zero. So if you compare that to the cost of 500 houses in Cambridge for social housing, that's 70 million that's going to cost us in Cambridge. We have got plans already in East Cambs, and we're a small authority, to build 350 trust houses. Again, at zero cost to the taxpayer. So this is a strategy that isn't pie in the sky. It's not, it might or be or it could be. It's up and running now. That's one scheme that's going. We've got another 120 in Hackham coming online. We've got 500 coming online in Kennet. We can roll this out from day one across the whole of the county. Now, your exact question mentioned outsider suburbs and the quality of housing. Well, let me tell you that the housing in Streatham, all the houses on the site, the market houses and the trust housing, are exactly the same standard, and they can be built to any standard. They're rents, they're rental houses and they're shared ownership. The rental houses are coming in at 70% of market rate. But where land value is higher, you can either provide more trust houses or have lower rental values. So these are forever housing for the community, controlled by the community, built in the community, and they'll be here not in 10 years, 20 years, but they'll be here in 150, 200 years.
All right, thanks, James. Thank Rod, I'm going to give you 15 seconds right of response, but you know, don't
no, sure. Take it so piece by piece. Right? I think just in terms of this point around delivering of homes, let me just give you the illustration of the Southern Fringe. I was executive councillor for property on the City Council in the mid-2000s.
Yep.
We had a scheme which delivered 180 homes as part of the Southern Fringe. The reason we couldn't deliver that scheme was not because we didn't want to, it was because the umbrella developer on that site decided to pause for 3 years because of the financial crisis. So it's not actually the authorities that are causing the problem, it's actually the commercial developer. And he's in the housing white paper that talks about basically reducing the time frame from 3 years to two to force developers to develop, it means that basically all they have to do is put a shovel in the ground,
right,
and they've triggered that requirement.
Okay.
So it's an ongoing issue.
All right, building housing is not...
Sorry, can you come back? James's Community Lands Trust is magic, isn't it? He's making money from nowhere. How's he doing it? He's doing it by building outside the planning envelope. Now, basically, the planning envelope says this is where good planning should build houses, and that's what puts the value of the land up. He's now, with the loophole of Community Land Trust, saying we're going to put these houses outside the planning envelope onto agricultural land or lower cost land, and the difference makes up the what's that. In all honesty, if you got rid of the planning norms rather than just this one loophole, got rid of the planning norms, the cost of building land would be the same as agricultural land, £10,000 an acre. Okay. All of a sudden, the price of housing drops to below £100,000. It's a sleight of hand, which I warn you about, because it's all about building outside the planning envelope. Planning is either a good idea, in which case you keep your stuff in the planning envelope, or it's a bad idea and we can build anywhere. You can't have your cake and eat it.
James? No, I feel I need to give you a right response. I would want right response on that one. So. I'm the chair, so I'll give you that one.
Okay, and I'm going to stand up again because you asked a question. It's only polite for me to look at you. When this, the whole thing about being involved in politics at council level, it's about meeting challenges head on
and finding an answer to the problems you have. You can either say, right, well, we'll go to government and we'll take all land out of the planning envelope. Clearly never going to happen. Or you can look at the situation, you can work with your communities and come up with an answer to the problem. It's problem solving. We all do it in our everyday life. Mm-hmm. Politics is no different. The policy that we've come up with in East Cairns, I think it is brilliant, and I can't take credit for it because it's my deputy leader that came up with the idea, but we worked together on it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the personal ingenious person who came up with it, but it's common sense. If you've got a landowner who wants to work with the community, it isn't about foisting development in the community, it's about working with the community. If the community are happy to develop land on the side of their town or village or city or wherever it may be, then the uplift in that value of the land goes to those trust houses. That's common sense, playing the system, maybe. It's common sense, problem solving, putting something in place for the good of the people and to give people the opportunity to get on the housing ladder. I'm very proud of it, and I would absolutely take the Pepsi challenge with Peter on this at any time you want.
Great, okay, very good. We're getting towards the last 15 minutes, and I need to set aside 8 minutes for our candidates to give their final 2 minute thoughts. We've had a couple of questions, so I'm going to try and wrap them up. I think there's a question which I want you to reflect on, which is about how you as the mayor will promote the area, and particularly the business community and the dynamic area that spans not only Cambridge, which we've talked quite a bit about tonight, but actually, you know, much of the area, including Peterborough and the other places as well. How will you effectively be an ambassador for the area to external audiences, whether they're international or whether they're national? Well, how will you do that practically? Let's ask Kevin. You answer that question. How will you be that ambassador? What will you be doing?
Well, if I start from the position that we're at now, I was, as I said at the beginning, very much involved in the negotiations for housing, essentially. But it was the negotiations for the combined authority, and each of the authorities were there negotiating with government about what they thought and what they wanted out of that. As a result of those negotiations, we got that unique deal, that unique £70 million ring fence for Cambridge. What I would be bringing is that ability to stand up to government, negotiate with government in order to get different, you know, a deal that is not the norm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did in this realm for the city of Cambridge. Now the dynamic changes. It becomes Cambridgeshire and Peterborough. And I would do exactly that. I would be doing exactly the same thing. I would be talking to businesses. I would be talking to government about what this area needs, what I, you know, and the constituent parts. Because let's not forget, you know, this mayoralty is not some sort of dictatorship. It's not a mayor working in isolation. It is the mayor of the combined authority. So it is using all the local authorities that are part of the combined authority, and getting the best for the whole area from, as I said, from business and from government.
Okay, very good. Peter, ambassador for the area, how would you do it? What would you be doing?
I think the first thing I'd do is look for the best in Cambridgeshire and ask them to do the job. Because I think we've got so much to be proud of. It's much better it coming from the people who have achieved and who are doing it, whether it's community leaders or business leaders or anything else. And just show the depth of committed people that we've got here. One person going up is a load of puff, but if you've got a whole team of people willing to spend the time to do it, I think it'd be much, much more powerful.
Okay, very good. James?
Yeah, Cambridgeshire is my home. I'm from the edge of the Fens. I love the Fens. I love the south of the county. I love the west of the county. And I love the north of the county. I'm a particularly sad person because I love where I live so much. And I will sell it to absolutely anyone because I believe this is the best place in the country to live. I choose to live here, I will always live here, and I will back it at any time. I know we've got the building blocks of massive success in this county.
Great.
What we have around the south to what we have in the north, the economy is strong all over. Connect it up, do it properly, and it will fly. I will sell that to absolutely anyone.
Brilliant. Okay, Rod, Ambassador, how would you do it?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges as Ambassador that the Mayor will face is Brexit. Let's not beat about the bush. Mm-hmm. That basically Brexit's going to be the key issue that this region faces for the next 5, 10, maybe 15 years. And I think as Ambassador for the region, it's about basically being a strong voice to the region with national government to get more money for the region in relation to protecting it from that Brexit journey that we've embarked upon. And I think one of the things that I would certainly explore doing is bringing together experts as an advisory panel to help me in terms of being that voice with national government.
Okay.
Because I think that is the most important thing that businesses and people of the region will be focusing on over the next couple of years.
Okay, thank you very much. You've got one last question. Be brief, sorry, we're going to be running out of time, and then we'll get some quite nice question. And
if
then
you accept that all political statements, those who are not in power, are hypothetical at every stage, if we accept that premise as a start, and that effectively the four of you are candidates for a £600 million chief executive job, I interview about three people a week, and I'm sitting here now looking at you, thinking, who would I pick? My new role, given that the eyes of the country are on us in this new, to the extent of the novelty of the Metro Mayor, given Brexit, given the sensitivity of the economy in Cambridgeshire. Very quickly, without speaking hypothetically, what gives you, each of you, the candidates, the experience to run a £600 million business?
Okay, so this might touch on your closing statements, but nevertheless, it's a good question. So, sell your wares. Why is it you that should have the job? Kevin?
Because I've been working for the last 2 years, certainly within Cambridge City Council, as the Executive Councillor for Housing, and I have built a reputation on that. We have started building council housing again at a time when very few places were doing that. As I said, I've negotiated this extra deal for Cambridge City Council to be able to build that, and I believe that those negotiating skills will enable me to do this role completely.
Okay, very good. Peter, why you?
I spent 7 years in local government, two of them in the policy unit at Cambridgeshire County Council. I was a board member of EDA, a precursor of the combined authority. Mm-hmm. And in between, I grew a business from one person to a LSE-listed multinational, which sold for $250 million. There's a pretty broad range of experience there. I'm very confident that I can deal with complexities of this.
Okay, very good. Rod, why you?
So I believe I have the skills and the real life experience needed to be there. I've run my own business, I have a career in finance, and I combine that with over a decade in local government, working for delivering for people. And then on top of that, I've actually stepped beyond politics in relation, for example, to the Remain campaign as part of the referendum. I work with politicians of all political colours, so I understand what it's like to work together for a common goal. And finally, I'm more than just a politician. I have a life outside politics, and I think that's an important ingredient for the mayor. Somebody who can actually touch the common person, to actually relate to the common person, and to relate on an individual basis.
Okay, very good. James, why you?
Yeah, I'll take my experience of running a smaller authority, running it efficiently, delivering on major infrastructure projects. I'll come to the combined authority with my limitless ambition, and I will deliver on every promise that I've put to the public.
Okay, very good. So that concludes the questions and answers session. So we're now going to give our candidates up to 2 minutes to make their closing statement, and we're going to do it in reverse order. So Peter, if you come back to the lectern, so we've got similarity across the piece. So we're going to go Peter, then James, Rod, and finally Kevin. I'll hold the stopwatch and you can get up to 2 minutes, starting from now.
Today, the subject has been about the economy and the related issues of it. But actually, what I want to do is to be a mayor that rebuilds community. My view is that councils and corporations have been destroying community everywhere. They've been taking our schools out of the community and making them an exam factory. They've been separating the electorate from the decision making, with you know, all the decisions being made by councillors sitting in closed rooms. I think we all want a happy life. I think we want a happier life for our children. When I look at my early life in Cambridge and compare it to the kids starting out in Cambridge, I had a way better time. All of this wealth hasn't made Cambridge a happier place. And what I really want to do as mayor is actually shift the focus towards a happiness and community agenda rather than the harsh and very divisive money, money, money.
Thank you very much, Peter. James, another 2 minutes. If you'd like to come up to the lectern after 2 minutes, starting now.
Thank you. You've listened to me speak, you've listened to my vision for Cambridgeshire, you've listened to the fact that I have policies to deliver and examples of how I've delivered in the past. I stand before you with the knowledge I have learned from running an authority, because I know that I can deliver on what I'm promising you, because I've got the experience of how to do it and I've got examples of how it's been done. Not only that, I've got an open door to government with the backing of Cabinet Ministers and the Prime Minister to bring forward the change that we need in Cambridgeshire. I am in constant dialogue with the government. They know what I want to see happen and they are backing me. If you want a mayor who can deliver across the whole of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, if you want a mayor with the vision and the drive and the ambition to put this county at the very highest level from top to bottom, then you need to vote for me as mayor on the 4th of May. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Rod?
So what you've heard this evening is the role of the mayor is not a simple one. The role of the mayor is about working with people, working with politicians of a different colour, working with different types of groups. And I believe that I will be that mayor. I will be that mayor that is the glue. And it's a role that is very important for this region. As we face one of two directions, we either face the ability to continue to grow, or we face the risk of that growth collapsing because of our inability to address those key issues of housing, transport, and jobs. And as mayor, I want to be the mayor for everybody across the region, to deliver that prosperity that sits here in the Cambridge area to all those parts of the region, like Wisbeach, like March, who don't feel as though they're sharing in the economic wealth that we are creating. And as mayor, I want to be that voice, that strong voice, that delivers those messages to national government to deliver and secure more funding for the region to deliver on those goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Rod. And our last candidate, Kevin Price.
Yes, thank you. As mayor, I would be standing up. I think everybody's going to say that. We would say that, wouldn't we? But for the entire region, this is something I've already said. When this started, I was negotiating along with the leader of the Cambridge City Council for Cambridge City Council, for the people of Cambridge, for what they would get out of any deal, and that we, I think, achieved a huge amount in that. I would want to take that forward. I would want to take that ability to stand up to government, and it was standing up to government. It wasn't having an open door to government and an open door to government ministers, because I don't have that open door, but it was standing up and telling them this is what we want. What we actually wanted was not for them to give us money, but to allow us to borrow money against our housing stock. But that wasn't to be. But we got the next best thing in that, in terms of the ability to build. I want to be able to use that across the whole of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough.
Thank you very much indeed. So that really brings us to a conclusion on this session. A couple of thank yous before
I formally finish us. Thank you all for coming. 6 o'clock on a Tuesday. Good numbers here as well, which shows an interest in the issues and in the position. I'd like to thank Cambridgeshire Chamber of Commerce. John, thanks for working with us to put the event on and to get people here. And obviously I'd like to thank the four candidates for coming and offering us great insights. And I wish you good luck over the next 6 weeks as you look to win. I think what will be a fantastic job, representing a fantastic area in a time where, you know, we do need strong leaders to make places like Cambridge and Peterborough a success, not only for the people of this area, but actually for the country at large as well. So you're right in a sense that there will be a national focus on what happens in places like this, not just the local focus. So I wish you well, and we'll be looking forward to the result in 6 or so weeks in time. But for now, thank you very much indeed for coming.